Thank you so much, everyone, for coming. It is wonderful to be here. Your reputation precedes you because the... Oh, should I? Sure.
We bring the whole thing.
I'm good. I'll hold it.
You sure?
Yeah.
Because you can put it here if you want to.
I was saying that... Better? Okay. Your reputation precedes you because the past week... I keep getting texts from people. Are you going to Chicago? Are you going to Chicago? Apparently, we're very connected, everybody. And I'm so grateful to Rabbi Brand for bringing me in, for arranging all of this. We traveled to Israel together in November, and I am still inspired by things that I've heard from Rabbi Brand. So I have a little bit of a jealousy of this community that you get to hear him all the time. And it's very special. And I've also heard from him how special this community is. So we're standing here before Pesach, and there's a lot on my mind. There's been a lot on my mind this year. And I've been thinking about, you know, what is it that I'm learning from this year's Pesach that's going to be different from what I've learned from other years' Pesach. And there's something just so beautiful about the Jewish calendar that gives us these times in the year to stop and reflect and to use our holidays as ways to think about where we are, think about our situation, and every holiday this year has done that for me, and nothing more than this year's Pesach, where I am really, really in the depth of thought about who we are, our identity, and who we are as a Jewish people. And I'd like to start just with a little anecdote that happened to me a number of years ago. I went on a trip to Poland. Has any of you ever gone on like a heritage trip to Poland? So I went when I was young. I went when I was in Michlala after my year in Israel, but then I went again as an adult. And that was a totally different experience. I went as a teacher. So, you know, here I was, I'm, you know, the wise teacher who knows everything, and students were asking me questions. I literally had no answers for anybody on this trip. So it was a very humbling experience, and also to experience the sights as an adult was also just really different than when I was 19. But anyway, it was a very heavy trip. You know, go from one sad place to another. Even the happy places were sad because you think about, you know, what isn't there, what could have been. And I was sitting on the bus with one of my students after going to a very terrible site, and everyone was really low and dealing with their grief in whatever way they were dealing with it. And she said, you know, could we talk privately? So I said, sure, of course. We go and we sit together. And she said, I'm having a hard time with this whole trip. And I said, you know, of course, yes, we're all having a hard time. And she's like, okay, you don't know what I'm talking about, so don't interrupt me. I'm having a hard time with this trip because I'm Sephardi. And I said, oh, like, tell me what you mean. She said, well, my father's family is from Morocco. My mother's family is from Iran. And while we have our own stories of alienation and exile, and we have our own stories of being kicked out of our homes, we don't have this story. I don't have any relatives who went through the Holocaust, not one. And I don't know what to make of that. And I feel a little detached. I mean, this isn't my story. This isn't my family story. And I feel like I feel a little bad. I'm kind of taking the story. It's somebody else's story. And I really sat with that for a little bit because this was very much my family's story. My grandmother was a survivor of Auschwitz. Countless relatives of mine were killed. My entire family was displaced from Poland and Czechoslovakia and Hungary. I'm saying this was my family story. And it just didn't occur to me what it must be like to go on a Poland trip, but not know anybody who was even affected, even had to run away personally, not be related to people. I didn't know what to say. I was at a loss for words. And I must have come up with something. I did end the conversation, but it must not have been so memorable to me because I can't remember what I came up with. And I thought about this story this year on October 7th. And after the terrible Simchat Torah Shmini Atzeret and Simchat Torah. And you know that feeling. I'm sure some of you felt it also. You don't want Yom Tov to end, and you do want Yom Tov to end. And it's, you know, that feeling. And one of the things that I was feeling was, and I remembered my student, and I said, is this my story? It feels like my story, but it doesn't feel like my story. It happened to me, and it didn't happen to me. And I felt that same, what she had expressed to me those years before, I felt that this is, I want it to be mine, but I feel a little bit guilty saying it's mine. I wasn't there. I don't have kids serving in the army. I actually even lived in Israel for a year. So all of my kids' friends that we had made that year, we were there 8 years ago, they're all in the army because my kids are the right age and the right genders. So even that really was weighing on me. And I've been thinking about that this all year, this question in my mind of how much do I own this story? And even though, you know, there's unfortunately anti-Semitism now, it still doesn't feel like the same thing. And I don't know that gives me almost the right to have it. And that is what I'm thinking about now. That's what's on my mind. And that's what I'm thinking about going into Pesach, because Pesach is a story of our oppression. Pesach is the story of our exile. Pesach is the story of anti-Semitism. And how do we think about Pesach? What does it mean to us? And when you open up the Haggadah to the first page of the Haggadah, immediately you're presented with a contradiction. On the first line of Magid that we say, Ha lach ma'anya de'achalu avotana ba'ara de'mitzrayim. This is the bread of our affliction that our fathers ate in Egypt. This is my story. I'm celebrating it because it's mine. I am a descendant. I am a relative. This happened to my family. I care about this. And then in the next line, we say, Kol dichlin yesei v'yechol. Anybody who wants to join us, come join us. Wait, I'm not checking anybody's credentials at the door. I'm not looking for ID. There's something about this Pesach holiday that seems to be not just about my story. It's not just about my relatives. And it seems to be that there are almost these two levels of understanding the Pesach story that almost the Haggadah is grappling with as it's going through. And that question is, who owns the story? Who does the story belong to? Does it belong to the people who it happened to and their descendants, because that's their family history? Or does it belong to Am Yisrael as a whole, maybe who weren't related to those people? Does it belong to the world? Who gets the story of Pesach? And you'll see different cultures take the story of Pesach. Even the founders, the American founders, talked about proclaim freedom throughout the land. That's not a Pesach. It's not from Pesach, but it's of that genre. So who owns it? So I want to start a little bit by going through the Haggadah and seeing almost how this question plays out. What is this story? What does it mean? And who does it belong to? And maybe from that, we can understand other things that happen to us and understand how to make sense of them on these different levels. So the first source I want to look at is the Manash Tana. And the Manash Tana, four questions. We don't have any four-year-olds in the room, so we'll all just do it in Hebrew and English instead of Yiddish and French. Sometimes we get caught in that at the Seder. But we ask these four questions. How is this night different from all other nights? Manish Tana, Halayla Hazeh Mikol Halelot. And then we list four different questions, four different ways that this night is different. The first one, Shebechol Halelot Ano Achlim Chametz U'Matzah. On all other nights we eat chametz or matzah, whatever we want, but tonight only matzah. Second question, on all other nights, we eat whatever vegetables we want to eat. Sha'ar yirakot. And tonight, only maror. Third question, Shabachol halelot in anumat bilin afilu pam achat. We barely ever dip. And here, we dip twice. And our last question, on all other nights, we eat however we want to eat. We can sit, we can lean, it doesn't really matter, but tonight we all lean. And these are four different things that a child perhaps would notice we're doing differently. The adults want to speak about how we're doing it differently. And the Abarbanel has a fascinating comment on the Manishtana. And the Abarbanel says, it's not four different questions about the night. It's one question about the night. And here's what the question is. The question is, why are we celebrating slavery? Why do we do things on this night that are contradictory to each other? The first two questions talk about our slavery. Matzah, we only eat this bread of affliction, and maror, we remember this bitterness. And then on the other hand, we dip and we lean. Those are symbols of freedom. So I get the symbols of freedom, but I don't get the symbols of slavery. Why do we have to remember the slavery? When somebody is unfortunately unemployed for a while, it's very hard. It's very hard on them. It's hard on the family. And then they get a job. They don't sit and talk about the unemployment. They are happy they got a job, and maybe they'll remember that the next year and the year after. And when somebody is sick but then gets well, they don't do things to commemorate the sickness. They do things to commemorate the well-being, that they got better. Why are we commemorating the slavery? Why do we spend half of our night and half of our symbols talking about something that we got out of? Let's just talk about that we were free. Okay, you want to mention that we are free from slavery? Fine. Obviously, you have to be free from something. But we don't need to wallow in it. And it's interesting to think about, you know, like, what's the answer to this? And there are lots of answers. You know, why do we talk about our slavery? And one of them could be perhaps, you know, you really just can't appreciate the freedom without understanding the slavery. That the slavery helps us really get what freedom is. Freedom from what? Oh, from slavery. Almost like the way the maror gives this, like, flavor to the Korban Pesach. I don't know how many people here like to eat their meat sandwiches with, like, a little horseradish or, like, a sour pickle in it. I'm getting some nods. We're thinking of, I know I'm in Chicago, so we have to talk about deli and meat. I spent time with Rabbi Brand. So that sense of, you know, the slavery helps us appreciate that, like, bitter taste makes us, it brings out the flavor of the meat of the Korban Pesach. And that is that's an answer to, you know, to our question. And that perhaps is an answer that we say in the next paragraph. Avadim hayinu leparo b'mitzrayim. We were slaves to Paro, and Hashem took us out. Yotzeinu Hashem bi'ad chazaka b'zro netuya. And then we say, v'ilu lo hotzi HaKadosh Baruch Hu et avoteinu. Had Hashem not taken us out, Hare anu ubanenu ubnei banenu mishubadim hayinu leparo. We would still be there. It's not that, okay, we were slaves and we were freed, and that's wonderful, but no, we were slaves, and it was crazy that we were freed. Nobody ever got freed. No slaves ever went free in all of history up to that time. This was so completely out of the natural order that we have to understand the slavery is what we deserve. We have to understand the slavery is what's coming to us. And then we can really appreciate the freedom. It's not our fathers that were redeemed from slavery. It's us, because it was Hashem who came in and took us out of slavery. So we need to understand and appreciate that. And Rabbi Jonathan Sacks adds this idea that it's not only about appreciating the slavery and how unusual it was, but rather, he says in source number two, as a nation, we have a national memory and identity. So when the Haggadah speaks of our experience of Egypt as slaves, while this refers to a specific generation and a historical time period, as a nation, we have had that experience implanted into our memory and identity. Says Rabbi Sacks, the freeing of slaves did not only happen to that generation, but rather it has become part of our national identity. This concept of slavery almost belongs to all of us. It's something that did not happen to us, but it could have. And because it could have, becomes larger than the experience that just happened to the people that it happened to. And even though this was not a personal experience that happened to anybody alive today, it belongs to us. It becomes part of our memory and part of our identity. And what you see, says Rabbi Sacks, not in so many words, is the Haggadah grappling with this question. Who does the story belong to? Does it belong to the people who it happened to and whoever can trace themselves back to them? Or is there something larger about the story that belongs to the Jewish people? Even if you can't trace yourself back, even if you don't know how many generations removed you are from the story, even if you just read it, but yet it becomes part of your memory and identity. And I think the Haggadah almost wants to go back and forth because there's two different readings of Avadim Hayinu. On the one hand, it says, you should appreciate this because this could have happened to you. Make it your own story. You, in some way, were redeemed from slavery. Because had Hashem not taken you out, you would still be there. And Rabbi Sacks says, yes, and there's another layer. This idea is about it exists outside of time. Redemption from slavery exists outside of the time that we were in the slavery, and now is almost this gift to the Jewish people. And that's what the Haggadah means when it says that this didn't only happen to our forefathers. It stops becoming a specific event, and it becomes an idea. And it becomes an idea that belongs to the Jewish people. And this kind of dichotomy of this personal and national identity that we're experiencing in the Seder, I think is brought out the most through the most important passage that we say at the Seder, and that is the passage of Arami Oved Avi. Arami Oved Avi is basically the core of our Maggid. We say this passage, this is what also known as Mikra Bikurim. It was the passage that people said when they brought their first fruit to the Beit HaMikdash. And after we finish giving all of our introductions about the Manish Tana and then the answers, and we talk about the people in Bnei Brak, finally we get to really the core of our Seder, and we're going to recite this passage that somebody would have recited when they brought their Bikurim, their first fruit, to the Beit HaMikdash. And then after that, in the Seder, we start going and we delve really deep into this passage. And we're going to talk about every single word and what it means and what the implications are. And it goes on for pages and pages. So if you don't realize that we're still talking about the same paragraph, it's kind of like, what is the Haggadah doing? And what it is it's going really deep into this paragraph known as Arami Oved Avi. And that's what we do for a lot of the Seder. A lot of the time is just talking about this passage. So this passage is incredibly foundational to our understanding of Pesach, even though it's not something that happened during the Pesach story. It's something that happens much later. This source is from Devarim. This is something that is a prescription of when you get into Israel and you even have four first fruits, you should go and bring them to the Beit HaMikdash and you should, you know, tell the story of Mitzrayim. So it's not the story itself. It's a telling over of the story in a totally different context. And that becomes this very important part of our Seder. And this is how it goes. Arami Oved Avi. My father, the translation here, this is from Ala Torah, is, or maybe Sepharia. My father was a fugitive Armenian, but you can translate that in different ways. Vayered Mitzrayima, and they were taken down to Egypt, or they went down to Egypt. Vayagar Sham b'Mesema'at, they went down with very small numbers. Vayhi Sham l'goy gadol atzuv v'rav, and they got to Egypt, and they became this great nation there in Egypt. Vayir'u otanu ha-mitzrim, vaya'anunu, vayitnu aleinu avodah kasha. The mitzrim were very bad to us. They gave us terrible work. They oppressed us. V'nitz'ak el Hashem elokei avotenu. And we cried out to Hashem, the God of our fathers. Vayishma Hashem et kolenu. Hashem heard our voice. Vayar donyenu. Hashem saw our affliction. V'yatam aleinu v'etlachatzenu. He saw our misery. He saw our plight. V'yotzienu Hashem mi'mitzrayim b'yad chazaka v'zroa netuya u'b'mora gadol v'otod muftim. Hashem took us out with a strong hand and with an outstretched arm and with great power and signs and miracles. V'yivienu el ha'makom hazeh. And he brought us to this place. V'yitein lenu et ha'aretz hazot, eretz zavat chalav u'dvash. And gave us this wonderful land, a land flowing of milk and honey. And here I am, says this person. And here I am at this land, bringing my first fruits. And as I'm about to dedicate my first fruits, and realize when you dedicate your first fruits, what you're saying is, everything that I get is really from Hashem. That first fruit contains all my hopes and dreams for what I've been able to produce. I dedicate this to Hashem, and I realize that my story started much earlier than this. My story started with a wandering Armenian. And look where I am, and look where I am today. And that's the Mikra Bikurim. And who is this Arami Oved Avi? So there's two different opinions. The normative opinion is the one that the Haggadah gives, that this is Yaakov. And Rashi quotes that. Arami Oved Avi, Lavan Bikesh La'akorat Hakol, gives the interpretation that the Haggadah gives, which is the Arami, which is Lavan, Oved, tried to kill Avi, my father. And that's Yaakov. And Rashi even cites the Gemara, that the Haggadah, this is the interpretation of the Haggadah, of the passage. So our history starts with Yaakov, and then, you know, and here we are. Look, Lavan tried to kill Yaakov, but it didn't work. And then Paro tried to kill us, and that didn't work. And now, look where we are. We're in Eretz Yisrael with our agriculture, and we're bringing our first fruit. The Bechor Shur and others say that, no, this is actually Avraham. Avraham was from Aram Naharaim, and he is the Arami that we're talking about, and he was Oved. He was lost, basically, because he had to leave his home, and he had to wander around from place to place, and there was a famine, and he had to go to Egypt, and then he came back, and that's really the beginning of the story, is Avraham. So there's this little debate over who we're talking about in this Arami Oved Avi. The Haggadah decides that we're talking about Yaakov, and this is what we say. This is the main part of our Seder. And actually, I was listening to a podcast by Dr. Micha Goodman, and he talks about this passage of Arami Oved Avi, that there's actually a machlokas about this passage. There's a debate over whether a convert can say this passage. Can somebody who converted into Judaism say, my father was a wandering Armenian, or Lavan tried to kill my father? That's a very specific way of thinking about it. And here comes the convert, and they're bringing new fruits, and they're telling their family history and how they got here to this place of new fruits. And it's not true. It was not your father. It was you. You converted. You're Jewish. So just, you can't say this, because it's not actually true. And the Mishnah in Bikurim actually says that Elu mevi'in velo kor'in. There are people that bring bikurin, but they don't say this passage of Arami Oved Avi. And here, listed among the people who don't say it, is Hager. The convert, mevi ve'eno korei, brings the bikurim. Of course, the convert is 100% Jewish and needs to do all the mitzvot, but they just can't say these words, and therefore they don't. She'enu yochol lamar asher nishba Hashem la'avotenu latet lanu. Those are the words that the Mishnah picks out from that passage, although it could have been almost every pasuk, that Hashem promised to our fathers, referring back to the generation of Yetziat Mitzrayim that left Egypt, because it's not your fathers. So it's wonderful that you joined Bnei Israel, but you can only say things that are true. The im haitza imo mi Yisrael mevi v'korei. So he says, no, but if his mother is Jewish, it's okay. He can still say it. That's enough of a connection. It can go matrilineally, but there has to be an actual family history for the ger to be able to say the mikra bikurim. However, there's a braita that disagrees, and the braita is brought by the Gemara Yerushalmi, and the braita goes in source number 5, Tani b'shem Rabbi Yehuda, Ger atzmo mevi v'korei, says the Braita, the convert does say v'mikra bikurim. My time, huh? How could that be? How is it possible, says the Braita? I know there's a Mishnah that says otherwise, but how is it possible that a ger can say these words? They're not true. And he says, ki av hamon gayim nitaticha, said the Gemara cites the explanation of the name Avraham, that Avraham's name is Av Hamon Goyim, the father of many nations. Lisha Avar Haita Av La'aram. In the past, you were father only to Aram, meaning that's your specific lineage, Avraham, from Aram Naharayim. Achshav Mikan V'Helech Ata Av L'Kol HaGoyim. Says the Gemara in Bikurim, Avraham is not just a person. Avraham is an idea. Avraham is going to be the father of many nations, and Avraham is the father of this convert. Now, it's really interesting because we know that you can interpret Arami Oved Avi in two different ways. You could interpret it as Yaakov, or you can interpret it actually as Avraham. And if the answer is Avraham, then not only, you don't even have to go to the fact that Avraham is an idea. Avraham's even actually a person, and this convert is a child of Avraham. So it's just interesting that there happens to be a debate on that word, but that's not really what the Braita is saying. The Braita is saying, you are a child of Avraham. You are a child of the Jewish people, and this is what the Rambam learns lahalacha. The Rambam in Mishnah Torah sides with the Braita over the Mishnah and says the Rambam, Hagir mevi v'kore, the convert should bring his bikurim and say the passage, Shenemar la'Avraham av hamon goyim letaticha, quoting the pasuk that the Braita brings that Avraham is the father of a multitude of nations, Hare'u hu av kol ha'ulam kulo, adds the Rambam, Shenichnasin tachat kanfei hashchina. That Avraham is the father, not just of many nations. He is the father of anyone who believes in what Avraham stands for. Avraham is a spiritual father. And Micha Goodman talks about this idea as these two, what's really the machloket between the Mishnah and the Braita? And this, I think, is what's really playing out as our Pesach Seder. What is the purpose of Pesach? Because the Arami Oved Avi passage is our Pesach Seder. This is basically what we're doing, along with some other things, at our Pesach Seder. What is it? Are we talking about our personal history? Are we talking about the people who were in Mitzrayim and their descendants, talking about what happened to them? Or are we talking about an idea? And therefore, anybody who subscribes to that idea, whether or not they are personal descendants of the people who left Egypt. And honestly, who knows if we are personal descendants of them or not? Thank God we've had many very important and special converts to the Jewish people. We have no idea. And it was so moving when Dr. Goodman was talking about this. He said, my mother is a convert. And I asked her this question, and I said, you know, how do you feel saying this passage? And she said, what do you mean? These are my people. Of course, these are my forefathers. And this concept that actually what we're doing at the Pesach Seder is we're expressing what it means to have a national identity, not only a personal identity. And when we talk about this concept of slavery and freedom, we're not only talking about that slavery and freedom that happened in Mitzrayim. It's not just the event, but rather it is much larger than that. It's something that we go through as a nation. This becomes part of our national identity to have been a people who were enslaved and are now free. And I think when you go back to Arami Oved Avi and think about the starting point as being Avraham or the starting point being Yaakov, you really see that there is a difference in how you read it. Avraham got the Brit Bein Habatarim. Avraham is the one that Hashem promised him, your children will be slaves. Not because they happen to fall into slavery, but because I want them to be slaves, because there is something inherent about slavery that they need to go to in order to form the right kind of nation that they need to be. They need to be oppressed, perhaps so that they will unify, because people unify when they're oppressed. Perhaps so that they will understand that the purpose of the Jewish people is to be kind, to build a just society and never oppress outsiders. There's so many reasons. But being slaves was part of our national story, the story that was promised to Avraham. Yaakov lived out that national story, and perhaps the Mishnah in Bikurim is thinking about it like that. It's actually a family story. It's a family story that's playing out. We are the children of Yaakov. And therefore, a ger, if the ger can't say that, so the ger should just not say it, but still bring the Bikurim. And Rambam writes this beautiful letter to somebody named Ovadia, who's a very famous ger, who wrote a letter to the Rambam in his time. And he said to him, to the Rambam, In the second paragraph, he says, "Are you? You asked me if you too are allowed to say in the blessings and prayers you offer alone or in the congregation, 'Our God, Elokeinu, ve'Elokei Avotenu, and the God of our fathers.'" A very similar question. Are you able to say, "Asher kiddishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu"? You sanctified us through the commandments and you commanded us. This says, Ovadia, I didn't stand at Har Sinai. My ancestors were not the ones who were commanded. It's my God, but not the God of my fathers. So am I, what about you have brought us out of the land of Egypt? That wasn't my ancestors, says Ovadia. And so forth. And Rambam says, you've sent me this question. And I want to tell you, yes, you may say all this in the prescribed order and not change it in the least. In the same way as every Jew by birth says his blessings and prayers, you too shall bless and pray alike. Whether you are alone or pray in a congregation, it's not just because you're saying it for the tzibor. It's actually you yourself should say it even when you daven by yourself. The reason for this is that Abraham, our father, taught the people, open their minds, reveal to them the true faith and the unity of God. He rejected the idols, abolished their adoration. He brought many children under the wings of the divine presence, etc., etc. And now I'm in the second bolded. Ever since then, whoever adopts Judaism and confesses the unity of the divine name as it is prescribed in the Torah is counted among the disciples of Abraham, our father, peace be with him. Says the Rambam, Judaism isn't just a family story. Judaism, to be the child of Avraham, goes beyond being an actual child of Avraham. Avraham represents something. Avraham represents an identity. It's what you believe. It's what you think. It's what you stand for. It's the way you carry yourself in the world. It's what your values are. And you, Ovadia, are a child of Avraham. Not a physical child, you are a spiritual child, and that is what the bracha is saying anyway. So of course you should say, Elokeinu, Elokei Avotenu. Avotenu is Avraham. And perhaps that is really what the Haggadah wants us to be thinking about. Both this personal identity and at the same time our national identity. So I want to think about, just for a moment, what is the difference? Well, actually, how does it manifest itself? What's the difference between a personal and a national identity? So I think perhaps a personal identity is your own experience of being Jewish. What does it mean to you? It's what Yonah said on the boat when confronted by the sailors, and they say, "Who are you?" He said, "Ivri anochi, v'yata Hashem Elokecha, Elokei Hashamayim, ani yarei." I am Jewish, and I fear Hashem, the God of the heavens. It's this idea that when we're told, Chayav Adam, lir'ot et atzmo, ki ilu hu yatsa mimitzrayim, that a person is commanded to think of themselves as they left Mitzrayim, what the Haggadah is telling us is you need to have a personal identity of Judaism. It needs to be something that belongs to you, as if you actually went through the slavery and the redemption, as if you were the convert, as you took on the values of Avraham. Arami Oved Avi, we all say the passage at the Haggadah. We're actually supposed to mean it because everything we do at the Pesach Seder is supposed to be something that we think is happening to us. And I actually just gave my students an assignment. We finished a unit about faith and faith journeys, and I told them to interview somebody from their life and ask them questions about their faith, and I strongly recommended that they interview their parents or their grandparents or a relative. And I can't tell you how many of my students said to me, "Thank you for this assignment. It was an awkward opening, but I'm so happy. I spoke to my grandparents." One of my students said, "I just didn't realize how alike me and my grandfather are in my thinking. I thought these were my own ideas. We never discussed them, but we're so similar." And there's this concept of, "Yigadata levincha bayom hahu lemor ba'avur ze asa Hashem li." But say ti mimitzrayim. Tell your children, Hashem did this to me when I left Egypt. the concept of personal identity that's brought out by the Mishnah is crucial in the Seder. We're supposed to go through this every year and say, what does this mean to me? And then tell that to our children. Create our own personal family narratives. It happened to us, and here's what I believe. What's a national identity? It's the opposite. It's not about you at all. It's not about your personal history. It's not about Yaakov and his family who went down to Mitzrayim and what happened to them. It's about our national destiny. It's about our national ideology. And while the personal identity thinks a lot about self-actualization and what do things mean to me and how do I understand things and what's my consciousness, the national identity asks you to be part of something larger, to almost suppress that personal feeling and be subsumed amongst a nation that has ideals that go beyond you and your experience. This is the life of an Avraham Avinu, the child of Avraham Avinu. This is who we are as a Jewish people. And very often the national identity will ask for sacrifice. The personal identity will ask you to grow and to flourish, but it stays almost inside the home, sometimes inside your mind, but inside the small enclave. The national identity says, look outside your small enclaves. It's not about you. And sometimes we actually forget this when we're preparing for Pesach because we're really just so busy that we almost sometimes get so caught up in the preparations that we literally forget to look outside our homes. And then it's like, oh my gosh, halach ma'anya, I literally forgot to like look around to make sure everyone had a Pesach Seder. Now it's at the Pesach Seder and it's too late, even though in theory somebody could walk in. But this idea of a national identity is about Knesset Yisrael. It's about being part of the Jewish people. It's about how the national transcends the personal and how connected we are to other Jews. And we just finished the holiday of Purim, where it was the outsider that made us connected. We were mifuzar mifurad bein ha'amim. We were scattered among all the nations. And it was Haman who said, no, they're actually all Jewish. And sometimes it takes an outsider to tell us that we're all Jewish. And then we say, right, we are. We have a national identity. It's actually something that's worth fighting for. I'm just going back now to Rambam's letter to Ovadia from the paragraph that's on top of the third page, two lines down from the folded. In the same way as he converted his contemporaries through words and teaching, he converts future generations through the testament that he left to the children and household after him. This is talking about Avraham. Avraham didn't just convert his children and he didn't just pass it down. Avraham gave his legacy and his testament to anybody who agrees with it. Abraham, our father, peace be with him, is the father of his pious posterity who keeps his ways and is the father of his disciples and all the proselytes who adopt Judaism. Avraham is just as much the father of the convert, of you, Ovadia, as he is of everybody, anybody who is born to a Jewish mother. And that's what a national identity is. It's to think about, what do we stand for? What brings us together? And when we look at the Haggadah, we're going to see statements that kind of bounce back and forth, because actually they're really both important at this time. You have statements like source number 8, Behold, dor v'dor chayav adam l'rodet atzmo ki ilu hu yatzam mimitzrayim. Every person has to have a personal identity. And v'higadet levincha b'yom ha'hu, teach your children. Ba'avor ze'asa Hashem li v'tzeitzi mitzrayim. Lo et avotenu v'vad. This is a personal ideal, personal identity. And at the same time, we'll have she'bechol dor v'dor omdim aleinu l'chalotenu. In every generation, they stand up against us and they try to kill us. V'kadosh baruch hu matzilenu me'adam. And Hashem saves us from their hands. And this is our national burden. This is our national legacy, that we keep getting oppressed and Hashem keeps saving us. This idea of slavery and freedom didn't happen just to the people of the Mitzrayim generation. It happens to each of us. And as I think back now, at Pesach time and post-October 7th, and I think back to that conversation that I had with my student, I think this is the answer that I want to tell her. Honestly, I don't remember who it is. It's not your personal story, but it's the national story of the Jewish people. Your relatives didn't experience the Holocaust, but the Jewish people experienced the Holocaust. We say it at the Seder, Shebchol Dor Vador, Omdim Aleinu L'Chalotenu. And it's not my family history to have been expelled from Syria and Iran, but it's part of the national history of the Jewish people. And I think perhaps that is something that we can think about as American Jews post October 7th, that we are going through a national event right now. It is not a personal event for some of us. For some of us, it is a personal event. Some of us here have children who live in Israel, or siblings, or people actually in their own family serving in the IDF, and it is your personal story. But for me, it's a national story. And a national story gives our lives meaning. It gives our personal stories meaning. It gives us the personal, gives us the ability to expand. And the national gives us the ability to sacrifice for those ideals, to live for something. And there was this amazing poem that was going around. I'm sure many of you have heard it. It was called The Coat of Many Colors by Racheli Mashkovitz. I just want to read it to you as closing. And she writes, I just have it written here. My son returned from battle, his duffel bursting with things I had not packed for him. Socks donated by a community in Argentina, a quilted blanket smelling like someone else's home, a blue towel from a family from the Moshav, tzitzit from Jerusalem, a fleece jacket gifted by a high-tech company, a scarf knitted by an elderly, undershirts purchased by a paybox group, a sheet that was given to him by a friend, gloves brought by teenage girls, a jacket from the closet of someone who came and requested to give. I spread out all the garments and weave them together into a coat of many colors. And then she finishes, "See Yosef, your brothers were there for you." And it's so important to remember that was the other way we got down to Mitzrayim. Not just because of Brit Bein HaBtarim. We got down to Mitzrayim because of hatred among brothers. And right now, our national identity allows us to give. It allows us, almost thank God, to sacrifice on behalf of our nation. We don't always get this opportunity to sacrifice. Sometimes we really can't do anything. This time, we can do. Maybe not as much, but we still can. We can do. And that's maybe why this Pesach is special, because we can do both our, we can express both our personal and our national identity, each person in their own way. And hopefully we will have a true Geula this year.
So all I can say on behalf of all of us and the Kollel is thank you. We should have the opportunity to continue to learn with Mrs. Besser. Good health for many years. We thank you to the Best family. Thank you to everyone for coming. And thank you for making this day possible.